You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Good afternoon. Reporting remotely for WFHB, this is Benedict Jones.
And I'm Sydney Foreman. This is the WFHB Local News for Friday, June 26, 2020.
Later in the program, WFHB correspondent Alex Dieterer has more on last week's historic Supreme Court decision, which ruled that the 1964 Civil Rights Act protects gay, lesbian, and transgender employees from discrimination based on sex. That's coming up later in our feature report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, Better Beware, your weekly consumer watchdog segment. But first, your local headlines. The Monroe County School Corporation discussed the reopening and recovery plan during their June 23rd school board meeting. Assistant Superintendent of Curriculum and Instruction, Dr. Marque Winston, said all teachers will receive training for online schooling. She said there are three key ways students will be present in school.
The in-person instruction, that really just speaks to that. Students and teachers in classrooms, in schools, where teaching and learning is happening each and every day. We will begin our classroom instruction on August 5th. Our school classes will run 5 days a week throughout the course of the school year, unless we are receiving guidance from the health department that we need to shut down due to a resurgence. We will adhere to social distancing when possible. We will have smaller class sizes as appropriate. We will engage in traditional learning practices and grading practices. And our high school students will have the option to take some of their courses in person and some of their courses online.
Winston said the other options are an online academy instructed by MCCSE instructors and curriculum, or an intermittent online learning. She said students attending the online academy must be able to commit to at least one semester. She said intermittent learning would be in a case of resurgence or case by case.
This is only used in the event of a school closure based on guidance from the governor or Monroe County Health Department, but it could also be used for students who will continue learning because of an illness or a sickness that they've experienced. Students will continue learning at home with their classroom teachers. They will not be participating in our online academy. Instruction will include synchronous live meetings in small and large groups, as well as independent work.
Assistant Superintendent of Human Resources and Operations, Dr. Andrea Mobley, said any student taking in-person classes must screen for any COVID-19 symptoms each morning. She said students must also wash their hands before leaving for school and upon arrival. Hand-washing breaks will also be scheduled throughout the day. She said each school will also increase sanitation.
So we're going to continue to clean and sanitize and disinfect using all the EPA-approved and OSHA-approved chemicals. MCCSC will have increased presence of custodials during the daytime and evenings, cleaning all the time, especially cleaning those areas that are the high-touch, frequently-touched areas. We will have additional hand sanitizer available throughout all of the buildings, and we'll have a lot of signage promoting, educating our staff and our students about safety and social distancing.
Mobley said classes should use outside classroom settings as often as possible. She strongly encouraged independent travel to and from school. She said MCCSE will still run buses, however, students must wear masks, sit in assigned seats, take attendance, and ride with windows open as much as possible. She said buses will attempt staggered pickup and drop-off times.
And buses will be cleaned and disinfected between routes and at the end of the day as well. And we're really studying our routes and trying to make the capacity on the bus as small as possible. In situations where there might be a shorter route that's closer to a school, we might be able to divide that route into two or three routes, so there are fewer students on the bus at a given time if it's not a long route. We're looking at other ways that we might be able to modify the route so that we have fewer students on the bus.
Mobley said playgrounds will also be disinfected daily and recess times will stagger. Winston said all students will receive frequent instruction on how to use Canvas, their online learning platform. She said all students will have access to social workers or counselors and will have social, emotional, and equity lessons. Winston said normal school year hours will resume on August 3rd.
Kirkwood Avenue will be closed again this weekend. Only pedestrians will be allowed on the street between Kirkwood Avenue and Grant Street. WFHB News Director Cade Young talked to Bob Costello, owner of Village Deli, Soma Coffee, and Laughing Planet Cafe. We turn to Cade Young as he speaks to Bob Costello about the Kirkwood dining experiment.
Let's talk about the Kirkwood dining experiment. So there's talk of closing off Kirkwood in between the intersection of Indiana Avenue and Grant Street. How do you feel about this?
I think it's a great move. It allows the city and the business community on Kirkwood to test or do a trial run of a pedestrian-only street. And it allows customers to come out and dine in an environment that these days they are more comfortable in, which is outside seating that allows for fresh airflow as well as social distancing, and restaurants are able to increase their outdoor seating capacity by closing the street. So I think it's great.
You're the owner of both Soma Coffee and the Village Deli. How do you think this move would impact both of your local businesses, respectively?
To move tables into the street, we were able to double our seating capacity. And that's the same for the other restaurants that are participating as well. So I think it allows restaurants opportunity to have more customers come in and dine.
You recently added 12 extra outdoor tables at the Village Deli. If Kirkwood is blocked off through September to pedestrians only, do you think this will attract customers to your local business?
I think it will attract more customers to the Kirkwood area in general. And we got approval from the city council through September, but we, being the Kirkwood Community Association, decided we would run a trial for 2 weekends and then survey the business owners on Kirkwood to see if this is something they want to continue doing or if they would like to stop that practice.
So over the weekend, there were city officials and others handing out surveys. Have you heard back on any results?
I have not gotten the specifics of the results, but I've heard that they were very favorable. And I do know the Village Deli we passed out our own surveys, and customers were really excited about it. They felt very comfortable eating outside. And for most of the customers, it was their first time dining out since the pandemic started.
Okay, so the last question I have for you, Bob, is what are your hopes for the future of the Kirkwood dining experiment?
I hope that it is an event that brings out community members throughout Bloomington to dine and shop in a safe environment and allows them to have a safe stroll down Kirkwood without the worry of traffic. This has been successful in other cities such as Indianapolis and Baltimore and New York City and San Francisco and Ann Arbor, Michigan. So I hope our city sees the same success and that the business proprietors on Kirkwood Avenue agree that this is something that they see as a positive.
Absolutely, Bob. Thank you so much. That's all the questions I have. Do you have anything else to add before we part ways?
Yeah, I think the last thing I'd like to add is just I'd like to thank the city government and the city council for working with the Kirkwood Community Association to make this happen so quickly. And for the business owners, both restaurants and retail who are willing to try something new and give it a chance before they pass judgment.
The Monroe County Commissioners approved their ninth round of food and beverage tax grants for the county businesses supporting local tourism. During their June 24th meeting, County Attorney Jeff Cockrell said this round of applications included the Monroe County History Center in Bloomington.
Monroe County History Center had a request, and as you know, we made a request to the Food and Beverage Tax Advisory Commission to allow for entities that are within the city limits but have a countywide tourism effect and a mission and purpose for that countywide idea. And so that went through both the Food and Beverage Tax Advisory Commission, as well as our county council also agreed that that was an appropriate use. So really, that's the change from what we've typically done, because as we know, the History Center's principal office is located within the city limits, but they do serve the entire county.
Commissioner Julie Thomas said the Monroe County History Center requested approximately $23,200. Susan Dyer of the History Center said they are reopening.
This is obviously a struggle for everyone, but we've really taken a hit. We are open to the public as of yesterday. So far, we've had two delivery people in to visit. So our revenue has definitely been hit. Our fundraisers, our big gala in the winter is canceled. So it's been a struggle, and this will just be a huge help to everything we do.
Commissioner Penny Githens said the Misfit Toys Enterprises applied for $6,000 for equipment to restart a safe karaoke league. Commissioners unanimously approved the grants.
Indiana saw 9 more deaths from COVID-19, with 510 new cases confirmed, according to state health officials. The newly reported deaths bring the total death toll to 2,403 people. In addition, the state health department reported 192 deaths considered coronavirus-related by doctors without confirmation of the illness from test results. That brings the total positive case count to 44,140 people who have contracted the respiratory disease caused by the coronavirus. The numbers are likely higher due to a lack of testing. So far, 453,980 total tests have been issued, according to the state's dashboard. There are about 6.85 million people who live in Indiana. That means about 6.6% of the population has been tested. 9.8% of all tests come back positive in Indiana.
The Monroe County Council discussed a county commissioner interlocal agreement with the Township Trustee Association to deliver COVID-19 relief funds during their June 23rd work session meeting. County Attorney Margie Rice described how the $100,000 of funding would be distributed.
I talked with the leadership from the Trustee Association, and they felt as if the best way to do this would be to take the $100,000 that the county council had already additionally appropriated, take those funds and provide them in $25,000 increments to the trustee association. And then they will form a 3-panel committee, like a COVID committee, that will look at the needs of the townships as they come in, so the residents within those townships, as these needs come in for COVID-related items, they will vet the requests with their 3-panel committee and then distribute the funds accordingly. If they go through the first $25,000, they can ask for another $25,000, and they can do that 4 times, so up to a total of $100,000.
Councilmember Jeff McKim said nationally, a fifth of rent payments were missed. Councilwoman Cheryl Munson said each township must meet criteria before being rewarded with funds.
And this is not a simple giveaway. First of all, the township must have exhausted all of its available assistance dollars. Second, the requesting township determines whether it's a COVID-19 related need and that they wish to provide assistance. And thirdly, the township identifies that this is not an eligible need per the township's guidelines.
Rice said included in the agreement is a reporting requirement for each township, once a month, to report on the use of funding. She said reports will also promote the availability of funding. Rice said the agreement would run through December 31, 2020. Council members unanimously approved the agreement.
Property adjacent to the City of Bloomington's new Switchyard Park will be transformed into affordable housing and commercial space, according to a city press release. The Bloomington Redevelopment Commission will review a proposed affordable housing design in its meeting on Monday. The Redevelopment Commission bought the 1.5-acre site at the park's eastern entrance. The press release said this was to help steer development near the park in ways that support the community's, quote, long-term goals, end quote. Real America, the Indianapolis-based company, proposed to develop 1730 South Walnut Street into Retreat at the Switchyard, which would be a 4- or 5-story apartment building that would offer 50 1-, 2-, and 3-bedroom apartments, according to the city press release. There would also be 3,000 square feet of commercial space on the ground floor. The press release says that between 20 to 25% of the residential units will be offered to clients of Stonebelt, which is a nonprofit that provides resources and support for individuals with disabilities. The remaining units would be available to residents earning 50 to 80% of area median income. The U.S. Census reports that Bloomington's median income was $34,435 in 2018. According to PayScale, the median rent in Bloomington is $953 per month, while the median home price sits at $304,319. The City of Bloomington estimates the timeline will include the application for funding to the Low Income Housing Tax Credit Program by September 2020. The city estimates construction to be completed in the summer of 2022.
The Bloomington Board of Public Works approved a public benefit of the Beeline Trail Extension and Multi-Use Path Project. During their June 23rd meeting, Planning and Transportation Project Manager Roy Ayton said the approval will include right-of-way on 17 parcels of land.
This project will connect the existing Beeline Trail terminus at Adams Street with the multi-use path on West 17th Street. The project has been included in the MPO TIP and is anticipated to have design and right-of-way services through 2020, with construction anticipated in 2021. This project will require purchase of additional right-of-way from 17 parcels, and if approved by the board this evening, the resolution will confirm that the project serves a public purpose and will authorize the right-of-way acquisition.
Ayton said within 6 months to a year, all parcels should be obtained.
Now it's time for your feature reports. Up first, WFHB news correspondent Alex Dieterer shares more on last week's historical Supreme Court decision. Alex Dieterer has more on the story.
In a 6-3 ruling last Monday, the United States Supreme Court ruled that the 1964 Civil Rights Act protects gay, lesbian, and transgender employees from discrimination based on sex. Before last week's decision, almost half the states had no legal protection for LGBTQ employees. After the ruling, the federal law will protect employees in all states from any employment decisions made on the basis of their sexual orientation or gender identity. Justice Neil Gorsuch, President Trump's first appointee to the Supreme Court, wrote the 33-page majority opinion. The majority opinion was also joined by Chief Justice John Roberts, Sonia Sotomayor, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Elena Kagan, and Stephen Breyer. The Trump administration has sided with employees in 3 cases before the court in the past, arguing that Title VII of the Civil Rights Act that bars discrimination based on sex did not include gender identity and sexual orientation. Gerald Bostock and Donald Zarda both contended they had been fired because they were gay, while Amy Stevens was fired 2 weeks after she told her boss she was transgender and would be coming to work as a woman. In this landmark decision, Gorsuch found that the language in the 1964 law bans discrimination in employment based on race, religion, national origin, or sex. Acknowledging that the 1964 Congress likely did not have the LGBTQ community in mind when they banned discrimination based on sex, he did say the words of the statute are clear. In his majority, he writes, quote, It is impossible to discriminate against a person for being homosexual or transgender without discriminating based on sex, end quote. Going on to explain that if two employees were attracted to men, one male and one female, then firing the male employee based on the sole fact that he's attracted to men and not firing the female employee for the same reason, that is clearly firing based on sex. Bloomington's The Back Door is the only bar space dedicated to the LGBTQIA+ community. Owner Smoove Gardner said, quote, "The whole goal is to support those folks who are most oppressed. We have to support the folks in the community who are most marginalized," end quote. Gardner shares more on what this ruling means to these oppressed communities.
There's a lot of work still to be done in terms of, you know, queer rights, but you've also got, you know, police brutality and Black Lives Matter and all kinds of other pressing issues that are, you know, intersectional with queer rights. Especially given that, you know, the queer rights movement was started by trans women of color. You know, there's plenty of unjust things still in the world that we need to, you know, stand up and fight for. Definitely is finally a step in the right direction under this administration. You know, but there were some things in the opinion, the majority opinion that was written, that still sort of leave the, kind of like a Trojan horse, they left the door open for religious groups to still be able to discriminate. That was something they did not make clear. So it's still unclear to me if, you know, the RFRA and all these other religious freedom acts that have been passed in various places, like how those are going to, you know, are those going to still be upheld? I'm happy about it, but I'm still uncertain if this is, you know, I think it's a step in the right direction. I don't think it's going to fix all the problems. So the thing is, you know, I haven't heard of that many cases of folks in this town being, you know, fired for being queer, right? I know I've heard of plenty of things outside of Bloomington in this state, you know, where that has happened. The ruling just happened. We'll still have to wait and see how it plays out or is actually implemented or upheld.
Justice Brett Kavanaugh, Trump's second Supreme Court appointee, dissented to the majority opinion. Justice Samuel Alito and Justice Clarence Thomas wrote the lead dissent. The dissent accused the majority opinion of acting as though they weren't remaining true to the words of the 1964 law, but instead rewording it to reflect the current values of society. Trump spoke about the ruling at the White House, calling the decision, quote, "very powerful," end quote, going on to say, quote, "they've ruled and we live with the decision of the Supreme Court," end quote. For WFHB, I'm Alex Dieterer.
Now it's time for Better Beware, our weekly consumer watchdog segment produced by Richard Fish.
Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your consumer watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
The coronavirus is affecting all of us, and now the Federal Trade Commission has just issued a report on the effect of COVID-19 on scams and swindles over the last 6 months. The fraudsters switched their targets and methods very quickly to concentrate on the most lucrative con jobs in the new conditions of the pandemic. For instance, we're all staying home a lot and are easy to find. Plus, a lot of people have had their income disappear, at least for a while, so debt collection scams have been going great guns. But the top complaint the FTC has been seeing is online shopping fraud. Lots of us are staying safe by staying away from stores and ordering things online. And because so many of us are having income trouble, the scammers know that a promise of a bargain is a bright, shiny bait. What items to feature at phony bargain prices? Easy. The ones that are hard to find, increasingly sold out, because of sudden demand or interrupted supplies from overseas. Spam emails, fake advertisements, pop-ups online, and text messages can take you to a fake website that looks just like a major retailer you're familiar with. And, of course, the robocallers are more active than ever. One scam that's working particularly well during the pandemic is the check scam. That's where you expect to get money from someone who's renting some property or maybe buying something you're selling to raise cash, and they send you a check for way too much. Thanks to coronavirus, they have an excellent excuse for not meeting you in person, and they'll give you a perfectly plausible reason why the check they sent was inflated. They ask you to deposit the check and send the extra back, but if you fall for it, you're out the whole amount when it turns out the check is a fake. And as you might expect, the COVID-19 outbreak has unleashed a flood of snake oil sellers, people touting treatments, cures, tests, and anything that will play on people's fears about the disease. The Federal Trade Commission has been playing whack-a-mole, taking down fakers selling things like massive doses of vitamin C, listening to a special CD, Chinese herbs, acupuncture, chiropractic treatments, ozone therapy, bioelectric shields, HEPA air purifiers, UV light therapy, and more. But dozens more crawl out from under a rock every day. As of now, there are no vaccinations, cures, or home test kits that work. Anything of the kind you run into is bogus. And any emails you get that apparently come from the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, or the WHO, the World Health Organization, are going to be bogus also. Finally, if you get any communication that claims to be from a government official, by email, text, telephone, mail, or tin cans with string, don't believe it unless you call them at their public number and verify it. Stay safe. I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at wfhb.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@wfhb.org. Remember, swindlers never give a sucker an even break.
You've been listening to the WFHB Local News. Today's headlines were written by Cade Young and Sydney Foreman in partnership with CATS, Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Alex Dieterer.
Better Beware was produced by Richard Fish. Our theme music is provided by Mark Bingham and the Social Climbers. Our executive producer is Cade Young. For WFHB, I'm Sydney Foreman.
And I'm Benedict Jones. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all other WFHB news programming online at wfhb.org.
You too can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@wfhb.org.
Stay tuned for KiteLine, a program amplifying the voices of those within Indiana's prison system. Coming up next on WFHB.
You've been listening to the WFHB local news on WFHB Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a WFHB local news volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. Feel free to check out the WFHB local news archive at wfhb.org to find newscasts, individual stories, and catch a live feed of the WFHB local news. We are local, longer,